All right, everyone, welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Maddock, joined by Peter Overzet, and hopefully eventually joined by Pat Corain. He might be big timing us right now. He might have honestly gotten too big for his britches after this report this morning from The Athletic that Greg Dulcich might be the Denver Broncos starting tight end. He might just not even want to deal with the Albert O lovers here.
How much tilt did that report bring you?
Legit anger. You've probably done this where it's like the tea leaves are kind of leading away from the guy you like throughout the course of the off season, but you're like, I can't stop drafting him now. Like I would be so screwed if Albert O was the Denver Broncos backup tight end now that I got to just keep going full steam ahead. I can't wave the white flag now.
Well, that's the whole thing about like portfolio balancing that is such a messes with your mind, right? Because it's like you're making bets on these guys and then they get cheaper and you're like, how do I not continue to make this bet? I feel like I kind of get excited when the guys I've been hammering start to get pushed up. Like Rashad White is one of the guys I've been hammering in Best Ball Mania 3, the Fat Lenny reports, you know, coming out yesterday, and now he's starting to inch up. And I'm like, okay, I can take the foot off the gas. I already packed my bags. But when they drop in price, you're like, gotta keep scooping them.
It's like I've expected Wandale to get more expensive because kind of you just get a rise on rookie wide receivers. I guess maybe were more a part of the narrative last year. But it's like Wandale. It's like, well, I can just keep drafting him. Add in, like, there's not going to be an upward pressure on his ADP yet, I don't think. And also, Corain is a fraud. I'm looking at his Scott Fishbowl team right now. No Greg Dulcich to be found. He drafted Brevin Jordan over Greg Dulcich. So maybe the false flag himself is feeling the falsehood of his claims.
How is your Scott Fishbowl draft been going for you? It's been like, this is, for me, it's been the weirdest year to do Scott Fishbowl because it generally does feel like the summer kickoff. And because 100%. We have so many best ball drafts under our belt that I'm coming in with a completely different frame of mind than I normally do.
I was actually just thinking that when I sent you and Pat this message to do the show, is I was like, normally this is when people start listening to this podcast, specifically when I start, you know, sending a bunch of fantasy football tweets every single day. Like that is gone. Like the day that the fantasy football season starts is basically the day that the NFL draft ends. And we have like an idea. I would say the schedule day was probably one of the biggest ones, but Best Ball Mania 3 was out even before the schedule. So in some way for us giant nerds, sickos, like it's no longer, I think, like the unofficial start of fantasy football season, which is a bit odd.
Yeah, but I guess what makes it fun too, and I'm sure we're gonna get into this, is like, you know, we're so used to being anchored to these ADPs on these sites, and you know, we're in almost an ADP holding pattern. I mean, I'm bouncing around looking at some of these drafts that you guys are posting, looking at mine. It's like, it's the Wild West. Like these ADPs are all over the place. Not every draft is so similar in the way they are on Underdog, like just rogue picks left and right. I mean, this is insanity.
It's probably my favorite thing is like you literally just have no clue who's going to be there at your next pick. Like you could be like, for example, I think the craziest pick in mine for me was I got Marquise Brown at the 7:06 and I was like, shit, I might've taken him three rounds earlier. You know, it's like, and the horrible takeaway that everyone has from these rosters every single year is wide receivers don't get any special benefit from the scoring. Right. Tight ends get the benefit. Good quarterbacks get the benefit. And everyone loves running backs anyway. So like it is so easy to just draft eight wide receivers, all of whom you love. It's no matter what Scott does to the rules, it is the same every single year at wide receiver.
Yeah. And it doesn't, just because the scoring is different, it doesn't change the value proposition of them. It's like, if I hit, I just drafted Deontay Foreman in the 18th round. If CMC gets hurt, like it doesn't change, like Deontay Foreman's going to benefit from the running back scoring. And then we're just playing into the same kind of, you know, positional dynamics that we're trying to push in other formats. So yeah, I will say though, and I've been feeling this everywhere. We're starting to feel it in one of our first FFPC main event drafts. Like, the tide is turning. Like, draft rooms are just so much more willing to draft wide receivers early and often in ways that I've never seen before.
I have definitely noticed that, even when, you know, the FFPC grinders start to post their draft boards and stuff. Now, they do still do the classic FFPC grinder thing, which is any running back with a semblance of upside does get actually the profile of guy that the grinders used to like a Josh Jacobs or Ezekiel Elliott or whatever. Those guys are actually like relatively in their same range as underdog, but like, Mojo posted this the other day, like, Travis Etienne, if you want him, you really got to take him, because he might go at the 301 sometimes, and like Tony Pollard is way pushed up. But there are, I think that the people have finally started to understand like the basic math that wide receivers score more points, and that really the number one thing is like consistency does not matter in fantasy football at all, because most weekly scores are not close.
Yeah. And I think the other thing in general too, is like, you still have like the typical drafters and the people that have their running back early philosophy. But what I've noticed is, you know, 2 years ago, you would be the only zero RB drafter in the room, and you might be the one of two like anchor running back drafters in the whole room, like one in weight. And now like you'll have two to three anchor guys, you'll have one to two zero RB. Like, it now is like almost a 50-50 of people who are at least drafting within smart structures. And so it's like, these rooms are getting tougher.
Yeah. So I think for the first time in like, shit, I can't even remember how long, I didn't take a quarterback in the first round. Like, I normally set it up, and here we have Karain. He was late. He was drafting on stream with Liam. He's coming in. Pat, we're already recording right now. We did not wait for you, because Pete of course has a hard out, but you're here. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks, guys. This is entirely my fault, so no problem that you start without me.
Well, I sent the link to Gretch too, so he might just show up out of nowhere too.
I mean, Kitchen says that I'm now like trying to big time Swolecast, even though I'm part of the crew that asked for a regular showtime. But I mean, we are saying that at the top of the show, Pat, that you're now too big time after this Greg Dulcich report, that you're now really feeling yourself and feel like you don't have to show up on time to things anymore.
Just been running around the park in super short shorts.
I did notice, I looked up your Scott Fishbowl team though. You took Brevin Jordan over Greg Dulcich. So how much of a believer can you really be, Pat?
Well, I believe Dulcich is still available, Davis. So let's not get too
he better be. Ourselves. He better be. I took Albert O in the eighth round of my draft. And I feel great about that decision. I got the Broncos tight end one.
I got Dawson Knox at 9-12. You're taking Albert O in the eighth.
My league went pretty aggressive on the tight ends, as we were talking about. It is, but
yeah,
it also
because of you, because you took Albert O.
Because I took Albert O. Well, I mean, you guys know this. Like, it is a very interesting challenge, because I also, cards on the table, my projections are not done for this season yet. I've not gone through every team in the NFL, so I didn't have like a cheat sheet to draft off of really this year, because I've just been drafting off of ADP on underdog.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
So it, I was flying a little blind, and I think those results are showing. But I, Pete, you took Josh Allen 101, and also I think why the 101? What was the thought there?
No, I have to take an L on this. I remember even Pat was asking us a while back, which draft lot should you get? And I literally gave it zero thought this year. I remember in previous years, we had kind of like gamed it out. And I literally
in previous years, it used to be a big advantage, I think.
But yeah. The third round completely reversal, messed it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would do 105 or 1-6 anytime if I could do it over.
So, cards on the table, I signed up for the 101 originally, and I got invited into like the 101 group chat, and then someone in there mentioned the third round reversal, and I was like, I will be leaving and changing my pick
later,
because I literally was the deuces meme. I was like, I'm not with third round reversal, especially because I would take Mahomes anyways, who I think ended up third in ADP in the Scott pick. Yeah, he ended up third behind Allen and Herbert. So it made no sense. I actually thought there was a reasonable chance I would get Mahomes at 7. That was his max.
Well,
ADP.
Hang on. Because yes. I asked you what draft slot and you told me five, which thank you. I've really enjoyed the five slot, but then so you ended up at seven.
So I thought five. I thought five and seven were basically the same value prop, depending on how much you valued getting a quarterback versus. Did you include McCaffrey and Kupp as part of like the super premium assets? Because obviously seven, you get the better pick coming back around, but five, you get the you're locked into a quarterback you love, and that is what I ended up taking McCaffrey at seven. I wanted to have McCaffrey in one of these leagues, because obviously it's really hard to get McCaffrey in the main event. Is he going first overall in the main event, or is Jonathan Taylor still going? Because on Underdog, he is now officially flippened Cooper Kupp. He is going second now.
He is he was the 103 in both of our main event drafts so far.
Yeah.
There's just no logic to taking him over into taking Jonathan Taylor over him if you're trying to win $1 million, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Seems insane, right?
I agree with that take. And also I've been tilting my Scott Fishbowl slot too, because what happened is my draft room ended up not prioritizing quarterbacks that much. I got Justin Fields at 7-12. I didn't end up taking Zach Wilson because I started with Allen and Lance, but Zach Wilson fell. And now I'm just kicking myself, because if I had that 1-5 or whatever, it's like you get one of the elite guys, maybe you get Jamar Chase, like where Pat did, and then Trey Lance falls to you in the mid third. I'm just like, I screwed this whole thing up and I hate it.
Yeah,
You describe my start.
I know, maybe I get Trey Lance. That's why I bought tilt about it.
I also took Trey Lance in the second round, which I think people think is bad. The general tenor is that I think people are saying that Trey Lance is like not a fit for the scoring system or whatever. But my thing is, one, Trey Lance is going to run for a fuckload of points, but if Trey Lance runs for a crazy amount and randomly happens to have an efficient passing season just because of Kyle Shanahan, like he is going to dust the scoring system. Yeah. He is going to be like irreplaceable.
I think he could too. Like they could throw like super low volume, but high efficiency. It could be like, you know, kind of like Ryan Tannehill type of, I don't think he'll be as pass heavy.
Who were arguing to me last offseason. I think you stacked the Titans and Scott Fishbowl 11. And you were saying they were a good fit for the scoring system. And I was wrong about that. They were a good fit for the scoring system.
Yeah, it's like low volume, high completion percentage, which, I mean, that seems kind of like San Francisco's deal. You know, I know Lance looked a little unwieldy as a passer last year, but that was a year ago. So,
I mean, this goes back to the whole thing, like, and you could apply this conversation to a lot of scoring formats and people's unwillingness to take on risk and things that haven't happened before. And it's like, of course, if we just look at like the super small sample sizes of these guys and try to retrofit them to the scoring system, they're not going to look good. But like, we're placing bets on guys that we think are going to be able to wildly outperform their expectations.
Their draft slot, period, right? Yeah. It doesn't matter the scoring.
Right. Like, it could Trey Lance flame out this year? Absolutely. Like, that's well within the range of outcomes. Or he could just be an absolute uber smash in any, you know, scoring nuances relative to Scott Fishbowl scoring could just be like blown out of the water.
Yeah.
Also, like, Lamar Jackson was the 108 in my league. And I know he's drafted pretty highly in every league. Like, Jalen Hurts was the 201.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Lance, I think, was totally fine in the late second. I think that's totally fine. Now, if you could get him at 308, is that better?
Shut up.
I mean, getting him where you got him, I think, is a huge deal, because you were able to me, in my mind, you got almost three first round picks, Pat, because you got Mahomes. How did Chase go to 208 in your league? Was like, what
stupid.
Is, were you with Robust RB drafters? Like, how did that?
Up was the 101. Happen? It was pretty wild. Kupp was the 101, and then Jefferson was the 207. So there's this huge stretch where no one took another wide receiver.
See, that's so obnoxious, because Chase went in the first round in mine. That's really annoying to me.
I should mention, I say that's ridiculous. I was one pick away from getting Justin Jefferson at 212. He went 211. So that we have noticed some of those wide receivers falling, because I do think there is this, you know, people worry about an avalanche and they're like, what if the next time I come around, there's no quarterbacks.
Well, I did that in mine. I took Tua at the 306, which was, I think, compared to getting Trey Lance in the third round, very rich. However, if I may defend myself, I think Tua is hashtag a good fit for the scoring system, because he, what do you have, a month with 80% completion or whatever last year, like, and now he's going to be working screen passes into Tyreek Hill. I don't know. I'm a little bullish on the Dolphins, like at least in terms of range of outcomes, but I think Tua in the third round is probably a bad pick. What can you do?
I'm with you that he fits the scoring system, because I think the system fits the scoring system as well.
Yeah. Well, Drew Brees used to be the example of this, where like he would have these games with like 240 passing yards in the Scott Fishbowl, but he would complete like 32 checkdowns to Alvin Kamara and just rack up the points. Pete, you got the DeAndre Swift. You must have been sweating getting DeAndre Swift at the 312, because he is kind of the classic RotoViz running back poster boy right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was completely prepared heading into this draft to do what we've seen a lot of us do, of just ripping wide receivers, quarterbacks, and tight ends for a while, but I missed out on the elite tight end. I didn't get like a Waller or Kittle or Pitts gift like I saw some of you guys get, and so then Swift was hanging around there. Instead of kind of like, you know, chasing maybe wide receiver or tight end picks there that I didn't think were as valuable, I decided to just kind of take the big cut with DeAndre Swift to anchor that. And then that allowed me to kick down my running back two can down to, you know, 13, 12.
Now, Pat, I need to eviscerate your kicker stance live on air, because taking kickers in a draft in July is, I think, totally you cannot do it, because the cost of losing a stash spot for a guy who might jump 10 rounds in ADP due to a training camp injury, I think is terrible.
Well, I haven't drafted a kicker and I'm 18.
No, I know you haven't, but you were kicking it around, and it's become a real topic of discourse on Twitter this week.
So the stance that you're trying to eviscerate here is curiosity, interest yes. in learning things. Yeah.
No, we can't have that. Everyone's got to have take lock from May 3rd to September 1st. You have to have total take lock.
Surveying the community for their thoughts. That's the stance.
We can't have it.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done
that. No, but that is, I do. It's like people did this last year too, when he introduced the kickers, and it's just like, you can't. And like, I think I have the same amount of running backs and wide receivers on my roster in this, which obviously I would never do in a league where you couldn't make transactions. But the value of the 18th, 19th, 20th round running back is like so clear. And this is true in like the main event slows that you guys are doing too. Like when it gets to be these later lottery tickets, you're going to be looking at like, oh, Keyshawn Vaughn, who is not 260 pounds, or, you know, Devin Duvernay or Tylan Wallace or whatever. And it's like, well, the running back is just the better value proposition when you're drafting early.
We took James White in the last round, which, like, I mean, isn't, you know, he's probably not going to make the Patriots, but in like the main event, you have a preseason waiver wire run. So like guys who are super binary like that, like I'm willing to take on even more risk in, you know, these managed leagues than best ball, obviously. So
Davis, feel free to say it. What does James White do for this team?
What is James White? It has like a good range. I mean, his range includes not playing professional football this year. His range includes being the third down running back for the Patriots. It includes getting cut and being signed by the Buccaneers, getting cut and getting signed by the Chiefs. Like there are good offenses who are kind of without third down backs or really locked in third down backs right now. So I don't hate it. I mean, I wonder if Gretsch's take of Ty Montgomery is maybe a similar way to play it. Like I could see either of those guys being fantasy contributors this year.
Yeah. And I think the thing that is nice, and it plays into zero RB builds in general, and this can apply to the back end of your Scott Fishbowl roster, any of these formats where you do have a waiver run before the season starts,
yes,
like
absolutely.
These guys that are binary propositions as far as holds or cuts, like that's so nice, because I'm constantly viewing our selections through the lens of, hey, is this a promising rookie we're going to have to sit on for 9 yes. to 10 weeks before you feel comfortable cutting him? Or is it just a guy in a backfield where it's like, let's just figure out if, you know, Jeff Wilson Jr. is actually the running back too in San Francisco. And then we can make that decision accordingly. So those guys were, you know, it's binary. I love those picks right now.
That is a great point. So like I skipped over DeAndre Hopkins a couple times when I would have liked to have taken him in mind, because Hopkins in best ball, you know exactly what you're getting, you know exactly why you're drafting him. But like, you know, it's so different when you have to manage each roster spot. Like, I don't know, could be week four, I could have four injuries and like really need to spend waiver dollars on, you know, player X, Y, or Z. And it's like, I don't want to cut Hopkins, but he just feels like total dead weight. And the Jalen Tolbert, Wandale Robinson guys, they're not dead weight, but they're basically roster spots that you're getting, you're assuming you're getting nothing out of for like 6 weeks, which is a tough ask, even though I guess the 22 roster spots is a big roster here.
Well, we have the same decision in the main event where you only have 18 skill players, and we had Marquise Brown already. And we were staring real hard at taking DeAndre Hopkins in the sixth. But I mean, that roster spot in the main event, super valuable. Really any league, like if it's valuable in an 18 skill player league, it's going to be really valuable in any managed league. So we ended up taking Kyler instead and hoping maybe that Hopkins would come back around. He didn't. We got Devontae Smith instead, which I feel totally fine about. But part of it was like, do we really want to be holding this DeAndre Hopkins spot for 6 weeks when like we got sniped on Kyler and don't actually have a completed double stack? So I'm with you on Hopkins.
Corinne, I noticed you week 17 stacked. You grabbed Jerry Jeudy as your Mahomes bring back in the Scott Fishbowl.
Yep. Scott Fishbowl is interesting because there's only 2 weeks that really matter. It's 16 and 17.
Yeah. And you are carrying over your regular season points with you anyways, right? So it works kind of the same way as the main event where your scoring season matters. So the week 17 points definitely matter and you want to get a lot of week 17 points, but you also need to have a team that has done very well up until that point, because if you're like the last team that gets into the playoff or whatever, you could be at like a 20-30 point disadvantage already, basically.
And doesn't that make elite quarterback more valuable? Because like if you're sort of figuring out your super flex, you know, you get stuck with a couple negative scores from your quarterback while you figure it out, like that sticks with you for the whole playoffs.
Yeah, Pete, you did not draft Rashad White in the Scott Fishbowl, unlike me and Corain. Are you having regrets on taking Daryl Henderson over Rashad White right now?
Wait, I'm pretty sure Rashad White was off the board when I took Henderson.
Well, I'm not looking at your board. I'm just looking at your team. So I'm just assuming.
Pete, defend that decision.
Pete, defend a decision you did not make.
Turns out you didn't make.
Well, I've drafted like 200 best ball teams and I take Rashad White before Henderson every single time. So I think it'd be very weird if I did it.
Picking on the turn just absolutely sucks. Like all formats. It is the nut low, especially when we're trying to do all these stacks that we're trying to do, it really does suck. Like I when I draw the 112, I'm just like, this team's gonna be bad.
Yeah. I completely agree. I was thinking about that the other night. I was like, I hope I have.
Was that the night you requested the 101?
I'm taking the L. I've already held it up.
He's not defending himself. He's holding it.
No, it's a huge L. But I was also thinking about this in context of, I was writing a little bit about the first round for like an upcoming newsletter piece, and it was really crystallizing to me the advantage that early drafters and specifically drafters in the early middle have this year, because depending on where your personal tier break is in the third round, you know, for me, it's kind of after Mike Williams goes. I mean, not only are you getting a top five player when you have a picks 1 through 5, but then I don't view guys like Debo and T. Higgins and Javonte Williams like any different than CD Lamb and Joe Mixon and those guys. So then you're getting like the same version of those guys on the turn. And then you're getting the tier break when it wraps back around, when you're getting an AJ Brown, Mike Williams, even a Nick Chubb, if you're going running back. And so I'm like, the advantages this year to having an early draft slot are massive and they compound through the first three rounds.
Yeah. It's more insane than it normally is. And you also have the fact that like I think that we're probably going to see a shakeup of the ADP like in round like picks 7 through 15, like once we start to get some preseason like best shape of his life stuff too. So it's like you also have this weird distribution of exposures where like you might have been drafting Derrick Henry or whatever, and Derrick Henry might end up being like the 14th guy in ADP by September. So it's like you have a bunch of teams that drafted player X at 8, and that combo is unique in a bad way where someone else got them far cheaper. I don't know. I just like opening up a draft and finding out you got the 9th pick. I'm just like, fuck. And
yeah, that's all my drafts these days. Yeah. Like every single one. I don't know what's going on.
It also leads me to draft the same team a bunch of different times too, because I'm never taking Henry. So I'm just like always clicking Dalvin Cook or Kelsey there and then starring the same players later on. So you just end up having the same stacks. It's bad.
I don't like it. The only silver line, I actually did a draft last night and I'm taking advantage of this while this still exists. I've done some hyper fragile from the back end of round one. So last night I started Dalvin Cook, then grabbed Saquon, and then got Alvin Kamara in the late third before that ends. And again, they're not my favorite players to take, but like versus taking watered down versions of, you know, what everyone else is doing in the first couple of rounds, it at least feels like an angle where you could potentially get ahead on the league.
Yeah. Pete, you mentioned this. There seemed to be a huge gap between what the market deemed as elite quarterbacks and then the secondary quarterbacks. You got Justin Fields at the 7-12. I took Daniel Jones in the 10th round of my draft. And it just feels, honestly, had I had that foresight, I probably would not have selected a quarterback. I took two in the third, but I would have just done. Like I would have taken Daniel Jones, Kenny Pickett, and Marcus Mariota and just held four roster spots for a quarterback and kind of just played the whatever their matchups happen to be. That feels like that strategy is going to be worth more points than taking like the quarterback 14 in the third round or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was hard to just like read the rooms and stuff too. Like it's so easy to know on Underdog, like, hey, I know that I can wait on Daniel Jones because he's going to reliably be here. You know, in these rooms, it's like, yeah, I'm not passing up on Justin Fields at this price point because I have no idea if Daniel Jones and Zach Wilson aren't just going to snap, come off the board right after him.
So I don't have a third quarterback, actually. I like this build, Pete, where you had Allen, Lance, and then a really nice price on Fields. I just have two at the moment. I'm having to figure out if I'm going to try to tack on like a Geno or just
your plan there? Are you taking Geno Smith or a Baker? Baker went before Daniel Jones in mine, which I thought was odd. But are you going to tack on like a rookie quarterback?
I think Ritter's still available. I don't know if Mariota's not available, and Geno is available. I was leaning towards tacking on Geno if he gets back.
The general cheat code in Scott Fishbowl in years past has been to take a first round quarterback who is not projected to be the starter. So like Justin Herbert, if you had taken Mac Jones last year, you know, something like that, those had all been huge cheats. The issue is that no one can talk themselves into Kenny Pickett. Like no one believes in Kenny Pickett.
Scott Barrett believes in him and took him in the 15th round.
I mean, that I
which is fine.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I mean, that seems absolutely fine. How did you get Waller at the 508? How did you get Waller after his Underdog ADP?
It's crazy.
I mean, I'm the only one who cannot tell you that. Like, talk to the other 11 people in the league. I was just sitting there going, okay, this seems great.
Waller's average ADP was the 302, 38th overall.
Yeah, Pat, it looks like you got him the third latest. There were two teams that got him at 510, but just an absolute absurd price point on him.
Well, the funny thing about it, right, is I took Lance at the 308. Then Aaron Jones was available at the 405. That felt like a pretty nice value. And I'm actually thinking, obviously, I have no chance at Waller, but I'm looking at Kittle. And Waller provides some cover. So maybe I get super, super lucky and Kittle gets back to 508. And then Kittle went like, I don't know, 10, put like 10 picks before Waller. Like I remember just sitting there being like, well, there's no chance Waller gets to me now. Kittle went 48th and I got Waller 56th.
It is like, I'm just looking at these min ADPs right now and the spread of guys who have single bit. So there were 20, there were 30 players who went in the first round of various Scott Fishbowl drafts. Like that spread is so insane. Like, I mean, what I'm saying is the Scott Fishbowl really is more of an art. It's less of a science, and it's more of an art, because people are kind of just taking whoever they want to take. It's like nuts.
Which is the fun of it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Pat, you all, this is not even fun to do with you. Your team is so much better than ours. This is so obnoxious. You got Tony Pollard in the 10th round and then got your Mahomes stack with Sky Moore in the 11th round.
Yep. I also got
no comment. Yep. No comment.
Is that good? Are you supposed to do that? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun. I will say with the running backs here, I want to build more teams like this in best ball and try to talk you guys into doing main event teams like this. Cause like, I took Jerick McKinnon in the 18th, but after Aaron Jones in the 4th, I went Pollard, Rashad White, Madison, Isaiah Spiller. I just did only the contingent value guys, which is a really fun way to draft in
July. Did you hear that, Davis? Pat is interested in doing drafts with us where we get gifted players around past ADP pick. Yeah.
Are you guys open to that?
Yeah, I'm interested in signing up for the main event where we just get to pick our bucket of guys we like in the double digit rounds, and then those guys just get automatically imported to our team and we don't have to sweat it out. Like, yes, I will be taking Rashad White. I will be taking Daryl Henderson. I'll get Greg Dulcich when I want him. I'll just take the guys that I want. I would also sign up for that.
It's a good strategy. I should employ this more often.
Are you guys doing anything with this Leonard Fournette stuff? Like, do you care at all?
Not really.
I'm hoping to draft him now, because I haven't really drafted him. I think I have like 3% on underdog. And I think he's probably totally fine where he's going. So that's like probably a bad take, but maybe I can get bailed out of a slightly bad take there, and I can get some early third for now.
I did.
That's kind of what I've been looking
I did two drafts yesterday, and I noticed that he was going later. Like, he was hanging around when like Nick Chubb was still on the board, and normally there's a tier break between those guys.
Yeah, I'm interested in him at that price. Give me some 260-pound Fournette in the third round.
Well, my thing with it too is like, I just have to be honest with myself. I can't laugh off the people panicking about Treylon Burks' asthma and say it's a non-story and I'm buying the dip, and then be like, no, this Leonard Fournette's a little overweight thing is actually a canary in the coal mine, and you could never draft him. So,
you gotta adjust for the cost though. Like, Burks, the most expensive Burks got was like a late 6th. Leonard Fournette was going in the 2nd round, and he might be the size of a hippopotamus.
But I would say that, Leonard Fournette, like, the kind of risk is already kind of baked into his ADP in the early third, right? Like, if you eliminated any concerns,
if his name was Jonathan Taylor or Christian McCaffrey or whatever, and he had the season he just had, yeah, he'd be a first round pick.
Exactly. And so I feel like the market has already kind of smartly baked that in. And now, like you said, if we're going to get a little bit more of a discount where he's slipping to like the mid third, like, then I will grab a few of my shares.
Have you guys been drafting much of him in the second?
Basically zero in the second. I'll sometimes take him early third.
My bags are already pretty packed on him. I have him 12% because I had a good stretch of getting McCaffrey a bunch. And so, you star all the Buccaneers. And so he would just be there a lot. I think maybe I got like in one of the puppies, I got maybe the first puppy, I got a bunch of him. I mean, I have no issue. I think every Buccaneers running back is good at cost. I think Fournette's fine at cost. I think that Rashad White is really good at cost, and Hayden kind of talked me into Keyshawn Vaughn. He said something to me the other day about Keyshawn Vaughn going in like only being drafted in like 3% of Best Ball Mania drafts, and I'm like, shit, I don't know, he could be out there, bro.
Did Hayden tell you his source was David Kitchen?
his boots on the ground.
Did he also tell you to live a little?
the live a little ethos is absolutely the Scott Fishbowl. It's just like, yeah, just live a little, dude.
And in the Scott Fishbowl, that is the correct ethos.
Yeah.
It's maybe not the correct ethos in Best Ball Mania.
Let's look up Soccer Dave's team and let's see. Wow, what a fraud
This actually sounds fun. Let me pull this.
Does.
He only took Treylon Burks, but no Ryan Tannehill, no Derrick Henry, no Robert Woods. Has not selected. Firkser's not there anymore, is he? Or Austin Hooper has not selected Austin Hooper. Don't know how I feel about my strategy that Dave also took Tua in the third round. I don't know how good that feels.
He's got a Chiefs super stack. He basically just stolen valor in this draft, David.
Yeah, he took Mahomes, Juju, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Sky, and MVS. Wow. He is just living my dream right now. This is so rude of him.
I know, he's a new man drafting zero RB best ball mania teams on stream, stacking up the Chiefs. He's really progressive these days.
Dave catering to the zero RB folks on the Swolecast last week was it really was all time, just being like, oh, I love zero RB teams. I do this all the time.
As he pulls up his exposures for two drafts.
100% Treylon Burks for him though.
Oh man. Did you guys through the Scott Fishbowl drafts? I mean, I've basically been using the ADP to kind of, and you know, I've been bullying the ADP more than I would on Underdog, but have you guys found any other inefficiencies in like the mid to late rounds, or you know, either positions or specific players you think the market is undervaluing way too much?
There's like a tier of running backs that get drafted all the time in best ball drafts that the market just completely forgot about. Honestly, I think because of the way the ADP is ordered in the draft applet. So like the Raheem Mostert, Sony Michel, D'Ernest Johnson, Jerick McKinnon group of guys seems to be a bit like, and this was another thing I was taking umbrage with while we're mad at the fantasy football community, is that the response to, yeah, it's fine to take a kicker because the pickings are so bear at the end of the draft. I totally disagree with that. I just took D'Ernest Johnson with my 21st round pick. The drumbeat of Kareem Hunt getting cut still seems to be pretty loud, in which case D'Ernest Johnson is like literally pretty close to being like a top 120-ish pick in fantasy football drafts. And that's just one example of why, again, taking a kicker is bad. But yeah, that tier of running backs seems to be pretty free.
And I think the thing with the kicker conversation for me, it's not that kickers aren't going to be useful in Scott Fishbowl. It's just you can pick them up on the waiver wire when you need them.
When you need it.
And you can stream them, whereas you can take a higher upside bet right now on a contingency play, like you said, that could, you know, jump massively in value, where there's just zero chance that a kicker can jump in value. So I think there's way too much opportunity cost in drafting them now, but I guarantee you some of these are going to be kicking around on the waiver wire. We see it every year. There's, you know, kicker battles, even, you know, guys flipping each other on the depth chart. Like there's going to be opportunities to get these guys on the waivers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the winning argument, because it's one of those things where if the market decided like, no, we're drafting all the kickers, like I'm going to start, you know, two kickers a week to fill these flexes, which like the way they score, like, I mean, that could work, but like you're giving up a lot of opportunity costs. Cause like, you know, there's all these,
but so like a kicker might like help you scrape through a couple weeks, but like the nuts teams are the teams that hit on, like, this is just a tired example, but, you know, drafted last year's James Conner and Leonard Fournette and whatever stud rookie wide receiver ends up breaking. You know, it's like the teams that hit on three of their late round selections, they're going to be using those guys in their flex spots. And those guys are going to be crushing Harrison Butker or whoever.
Yeah, but you also are going to have some injuries by weeks and you have a score that follows you the whole time. So it does, like, if there weren't going to be any kickers on the waiver wire, or just like maybe guys who like lose their jobs and a, you know, new guy pops up, then I actually think there'd be a decent case for drafting them. But
is there a Bimageddon this year? Remember week six last year, the Bimageddon? Is there a really bad one this year?
I think it's more spread out this year. Although I did, Pat, did you see the tweet? People asking us if we're worried about our Kyler Marquise Brown stack with the late Cardinals bye during the FFPC playoff. So like, that's something people are starting to bring into the conversation.
Week 14 has a huge amount of byes, yeah. But it's not really any team. I mean, Jonathan Taylor has a week 14 bye. That's kind of interesting. for the main event. And I hadn't really pondered that.
Didn't he have a week 14 bye last year too?
That sounds familiar. I remember the Chiefs had a week 14 bye 2 years ago, which was problematic. Or week 13 back when the playoffs started in week 13 because of the extended schedule or whatever. Maybe week 9, the Cowboys, the Broncos, and the 49ers are all on bye. So those are lots of top, 100 picks or whatever who are all on bye at that time. Not great. But nothing like week 6 last year where it was like every good team was on a bye in week 6.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't really stress the bye week stuff that much, especially when they're later. And I get that it's a money week and stuff like that, but specifically, I guess this doesn't pertain to Scott Fishbowl, but at least on FFPC where you can stream quarterbacks, it's just a start one QB. I'm not really too worried about it. And, the hope is that you've built up such a strong team around it by then as well that you can sacrifice that for a week.
And also, like, the big money in FFPC is in the final 3 weeks. It's for, Kyler's on bye for week 13, which is the first week of your playoffs in your division, in your 12-team league, I mean. So hopefully, because you had Kyler for 12 weeks, you've got a bye week. I'm an automatic bid is what I mean to the finals.
Yeah, but don't the points you score that week do carry over? I mean, but that'll be true with any quarterback, right? Every quarterback has a bye week. You're not going to get their score every single week. Yeah, so you definitely would be hoping to get the automatic bid. The automatic bid saves a lot of heartache from personal experience. You don't want to be we took a zero at kicker 1 week because we used all our fab on Mike Davis. I think I don't know. It was tough. You learn a lot. You learn a lot playing high stakes fantasy football. You definitely have a chance to learn from your mistakes.
For sure.
It's going to be crazy. Like it is. I do feel like we're kind of in this bubble, like this protected bubble of like just sort of quiet, that things really haven't happened yet. There's not chaos. Like just remembering the type of fab bids that we have put in the past and will assuredly put in this year.
The Eli Mitchell week one fab bids, just like an all time range of outcomes, right? Where people were showing their ass so hard by saying not to bid on him, which was
one of the
funniest. But I mean, look, there will be some, I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know what team, but there will be some running back who is getting bids over 50% of your remaining budget this year. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Hopefully it's Rex Burkhead who we selected.
There are, that is another thing in the Scott Fishbowl. Every year, the week zero waiver wire bids generally tend to be pretty important. Generally there will be one running back. Generally there will be a quarterback competition that gets an answer. Greg Dulcich will be a week zero waiver wire candidate this year, probably after he scores 5 touchdowns in the preseason.
Declare the week one starter.
Yeah. That's not happening, bud. Well, do we have?
It's such a sweet position for me to be in because it's like a third round rookie tight end. So like the expectations are zero.
Like if he makes the team, it's a win. Like making the team is like a win.
Getting any playing time is a win. If he somehow flips Albert O this year, it's like an all time victory lap. With no downside
the blurb had to have been written by you. It was the most
really
that's fascinating. Yeah, it was not. Because it was so bullish. It was like I was just like this has Karain's false flag, you're the Soros of Greg Dulcich, just like paying your sources via back channels to pump your bags.
Here's the true outcome, right? Is that they both cannibalize each other and neither of them breaks out, right?
Yeah.
Is that that seems like where we're headed?
Yeah,
I'm counting that as a victory if I get it. From the Albert oligarchy told me that nothing would happen.
The liberal elite who are propping up Albert.
Yeah, the liberal elites. I'm a man of the people here. I'm saying get your guy cheap. Yeah, sure. Maybe you'll only have a couple usable weeks, but it's great for the cost.
Are either of you guys starting to get worried that Judy and Sutton are just being way overdrafted and that the production is going to be pretty flat between all of the guys they have?
I'm somewhat worried. I am still drafting those guys because I'm I'm just very bullish on Russ. I think Russ is awesome.
Sure.
I really don't think it can be like overstated how important it is to build your offense around your quarterback.
Yes.
Like, and like the takes of like, you know, Russ, he can't throw to the middle of the field. Like he's kind of lost a step. His accuracy dropped off last year. Like they're going to have to kind of build a Seahawks like offense because that's the only thing Russ can succeed in. It's like, well, it's the only thing anyone's ever built for him. And all of the coordinators that he's had suck. Like every, like Daryl Bevel was the Seahawks offense coordinator. He just ran the Jaguars shit show. Like they haven't had anybody impressive running their offense like ever. And now they will. So like, I don't know. I'm willing to bet that like maybe Russ has a couple more tricks up his sleeve if he's able to run a fast paced offense, which he prefers, and one that's built around the passing game being the engine of the offense.
It also could be one of those things where like whichever one scores the long touchdowns ends up being the one that really breaks out, and that it might just be totally random, right?
I am worried about Judy's routes. Like they, there seems to be some reports, you know, that he is kind of playing out of the slot. He might not be out there for like a full slate of routes, which is a problem at a fifth round ADP.
Higher, dude. He's like 45th.
I don't really take him until he hits the fifth, but
yeah. All right, let's get out of here on this. The best 22nd round pick in the Scott Fish Bowl is who, Pete?
The 20th?
Your very last selection, your 22nd round. You're getting out of there. You're closing it out. You're filing that away until September.
Yeah, let me look at who's available in mine here. You know, there's two guys still. Actually, man, there's a bunch here. So the reason I'm like shocked is because these guys have been flying off the board in our main event drafts, but like three names just right away that are still available as I head into my 19th round here. D'Ernest Johnson, who we already mentioned, Eno Benjamin, who I do really think can usurp Darrell Williams to be kind of the number two there. And then Jerick McKinnon, who is just being massively undervalued relative to what we saw from him.
Why is this happening? These Scott Fishbowl leagues, they gotta figure it out. My answer was gonna be Gronk, but if any of those guys are still, those guys are all better selections than Gronk.
I just took McKinnon in the 18th, I think.
Yeah. Which,
I mean, maybe it was too early, but I mean, he might be the Chiefs passing down back. Plus, I got to get that Mahomes stack.
I took D'Ernest Johnson and Keyshawn Vaughn already in mind, so I can't even have that. I have Gronk preloaded as my final selection. We'll see if he gets sniped before I get there. But, I mean, an unretired Gronk goes for what in the week zero fab bidding?
Some people will just spend 100 because you can pick up guys without spending any money.
Yes, $0 bids count. There was some running back I spent $100 on a couple seasons ago. I think Tyson Williams I spent like $40 on last year. Rest in peace. Rest in peace, Tyson Williams.
Like, to her, Pete, we got him in one main and we were like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was with us. It was the one we all did together. We took it.
Yeah. Man, that team, man, I still like, I can't remember a lot of our main event teams last year, but I will forever remember our Jonathan Taylor,
We won Eli Mitchell too and didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Tough scenes. All right. What's happening on Ship Chasing this week, boys?
Dalton Cates is coming on and we're doing some prop bet talk and we're drafting a team. I believe Pete is out, which I think means I'm on thumbnail duty again.
So. Thumbnail duty, Pat.
I was actually going to offer you an olive branch to be like, I can whip you up a thumbnail before I go, but the people do love watching you put together your masterpieces.
What we should do is make a highlight video of me making the thumbnail.
I mean, 100%. 100%.
It is pretty bad. If you are able to whip up a thumbnail, I wouldn't mind not having the bit this week. It legit does take me a long time to do this.
My only thing is that when Davis is the guest, I have no problem with you, you know, but Dalton's never been on the show. I think we could give him a nice glossy image.
Yeah, maybe let's give him a nice one.
So we'll figure out about 28 hours from now if Pete did in fact whip up that thumbnail.
Yeah, you'll know. We'll definitely know.
We'll find out. Guys, listen to Ship Chasing. Follow Pat, follow Pete, and we'll be back later in the week.